This is Astir, talking music with writers and writing with musicians, hosted by me, Carly Brogan, and Joshua James Amberson.
Okay. Carly.
Joshua.
Astir.
Astir.
This is a podcast that we're hosting together now, at least for the time being.
I was really thrilled to be invited to do this. Thanks, Joshua.
I'm really thrilled to be doing it and to have, you know, these upcoming episodes we'll be doing together. So this is still season two of The Steer. We're still in the middle of it, but these are the first episodes of season two that we'll be recording kind of in real time. Everything else was recorded pre-pandemic. And we just now ran out of episodes that and had to figure out what to do. And it's also a time of change in that Jeff Alessandrelli, who is who started the show really with Sonny Blechinger and invited me to be a part of the show, is moving away from Portland for a while and just kind of in transition. So
where is he going? Are we allowed to talk about that?
I think we're allowed. Yeah, I don't think it's a secret. He's going to somewhere in upstate New York. I don't exactly know where. His partner was offered a teaching. She's a writer.
Awesome.
And was offered a teaching position up there. And he's moving to be with her. And
that's great.
Yeah. And so, yeah, he is in transition right now. And so I was like, well, I have the perfect person to step in to finish out the season. And so we're just kind of seeing what happens right now. We have episodes planned for the rest of the season. And then come the end of the season, we're just going to see where everyone's at. So
Trial season.
It's a trial.
I might not work
season.
Out.
I
might be fired.
Yeah, we're, I might fire you. Carly, how do we know each other?
Joshua, we know each other because we did an MFA program at Portland State University together.
That's true.
We were both not in the nonfiction cohort, and we became friends right away. And started writing together regularly. We'd meet up at coffee shops and kind of make each other stay on track. Joshua, fun fact, officiated my wedding. I got married last summer, a year ago.
That was really fun.
Yeah, that was very fun.
Yeah.
I would say that we're very close friends, not just, not other than just being in the cohort together. We're good friends.
Oh yeah, we gossip and regularly share things that we might not share with other people.
Yeah, and definitely. It's one of those kind of We nerd out on things, maybe.
And we nerd out. That's what I was just going to say. Was that you were one of the first people, the first. And I think actually only person I thought of when I was like, I'm just going to ask Carly.
Oh, I love it.
Is that, we can really nerd on writing stuff. We nerd a lot on music.
We nerd harder on music, I think, for sure.
Yeah.
Also because I feel like there's a lot of people that are other friends from the cohort that maybe can't like nerd as hard as we can. It feels like our little it's our little thing that we have in common.
Right. Yeah. Sometimes some of our mutual friends will comment on how we get going talking about music.
They probably feel left out.
And how it's and honestly, I don't do that. For as nerdy as I am about music, I don't do it with very many people.
Because likewise.
Most people don't like it, and I'm aware of that, and I don't want to be that guy. So I really have to like know that someone is down to go there.
Right. To nerd out. I also think that there's something to be said for like generationally, we're not the same age, but we're in the same generation. You're a Gen Xer, right? Or no, you're like a
old
millennial.
I'm an old millennial. So true. Yeah.
But we are still, I think I'm immature for a Gen Xer. So maybe, or maybe not immature, but music wise, I think we land in the same areas.
Yeah.
More so than I do with, if I tell, like, say, a coworker that I'm really into music, then they make an assumption that I'm really just like on it in terms of like what's happening right now, which I admit right now I'm not. But also, I don't know, you're just kind of in that perfect vein for me.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a lot of cross. Last night we were talking and the band Morphine came up. And I was just kind of like, I didn't know you're a Morphine fan too. And you were like, oh yeah, I mean, they're
blah blah blah. Yeah. Like Swimming.
Like Swimming.
I was very excited to
Which
see
is an
it's
album,
now a Spotify
album,
release.
Album I just completely missed. And from 97, it was just kind of like a gap in their catalog for me. So I went home and I downloaded it last night and I was like, I gotta check out this Morphine album I haven't heard. Morphine come up with anyone in my life. So there are things like that that are really exciting. And also I ask because you read a lot and you keep up with books, with especially creative nonfiction books. Mm-hmm. You're really up in my, you know, as much as like one can be as you're also writing and also trying to like read things from all genres and all different, but that you are keeping up on what's coming out and just like you're very involved in the world. So I thought that was just like a perfect fit. And what kind of writing do you do?
I write nonfiction mostly. I also write poetry. I've been known to write poetry. Right now, and I know nonfiction is like a really broad term. So I have written things like essays that are a little more reportage, journalistic, journalism-y, I guess you could say I don't know. But then I write more lyric stuff that kind of edges into poetry, and it's a little bit less definable in terms of, I don't want to say in terms of genre, but it isn't the like straightforward nonfiction kind of thing you can get. But then right now, my main project is I'm writing a memoir, and that is taking up all of my time. And I'm glad to have this time right now because of pandemic to work on that. But still, I'm trying to like bust out kind of more like quick articles or like hot takes or op-ed-y kind of shit to kind of throw in the mix.
Yeah, you had a few things. You had some interesting things happen early on in the pandemic in terms of your writing, where for many years you've been a grocery store worker.
Yes.
How many years now?
It's been 17 years.
Wow. Yeah.
I was hired at Trader Joe's, your unique neighborhood grocery store, at the very end of 2003, I believe. So I've been there. I've quit before and I've come back on a couple of occasions, but that's a good thing about that company. I can keep returning. But yeah, I had this unique perspective, I guess you could say, in terms of the COVID shopping, grocery toilet paper hoarding, mask refusing, and all of that, like that whole scenario. I wrote about that a couple of times, so I had a few things kind of, I don't want to be pigeonholed as like the COVID grocery writer though, so I'm not doing any more of those.
Right, yeah, but you had some really, I thought they were really great in that they were so essayistic, but they were these, you know, op-ed pieces. You did one for the Huffington Post and one for the Atlantic, and I thought they were so well done in that they're still asking these kind of bigger, more kind of intangible or existential questions in the process. So I like really liked seeing them because they were obviously edited down to be in these publications that have a very specific voice and a very specific style of, especially during pandemic, commenting on the pandemic, you know, pieces that were doing that, but you were still able to kind of be an essayist in the process and be like, I'm going to ask all the things that are really, you know, these things that kind of make us question ourselves too.
Yeah.
And
thank you.
So I really appreciate that. And it was really good because you've been published in a lot of literary journals and things, and you don't normally go into the kind of the trying to, like, I write a lot of, in addition to creative work and personal work, things that are, you know, my areas of nonfiction that kind of have a more definite eye, the first person perspective on it. I also do a lot of book reviews and music reviews and a lot of kind of arts and culture writing. Right. That's, you know, part, like, something I really enjoy doing, but that is just also very different from the more creative work I do. And
yeah.
And you stay a little more focused. Like, I think I like diffuse my energies a lot. And so
I don't know. You think that?
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, I think that you are like I admire your ability to just kind of like, okay, right now I'm working on my memoir and I'm like just working on my memoir in this way that I always want to do. And then I'm like, but I want to like also put out a zine about cassette tapes and this the new.
But Alyssa, you know how to multitask, because I feel you do. I like, the thing with me is, it's like I have, if I'm doing like a sort of writerly, if my voice in the piece is going to be more reportage, then it's hard for me to access my more lyric voice. So I feel like I can't do both simultaneously.
Oh,
I
like
wish
you
I
can't
could.
Switch between your various voices.
Code switch.
Yeah.
Can't
okay.
do that. It's very hard. I have to kind of like fall into it. So right now I'm memoir and I'm trying to like,
stay in that voice. I think that's awesome. But it was still like months ago, it was still great to see you getting these, like, I mean, the, like, from my limited perspective in the world, like, especially the latter one for the Atlantic felt like it kind of like had like a mini viral moment, you know, but it did feel like something was happening.
Was,
I mean,
kind of
you
exciting.
Were, I mean, it was getting a lot of attention. You got interviewed for the New York Times and the one of the local NPR affiliates, and, you know, just like that people were talking about it. And I was like, oh, awesome to see Carly, if nothing else, you know, your words out there, your name out there in just this way. That was exciting.
Thank you. Yeah. I agree. It was kind of unexpected.
Yeah.
It makes perfect sense, because it's like, how many people that work in a grocery store also are like writers? Like, it was like a right place, right time. It was just everything kind of came together. Mm-hmm. Not that it was really the right place or the right time in the whole scheme of things, because it was awful.
Yeah.
It was like, if we could not have COVID, I would choose that.
You'd be like, I would rather have never written those semi-viral articles
and be like hanging out on a river right now with a ton of friends, or like, you know, doing something like not COVID safe, but you know, yes. I can't. So instead I get this article, these bylines. So
right.
That's something.
That's something. Yeah. Yeah. Good. And what maybe you brought up that kind of how you got into music and just kind of like your whole history around it before we started recording. I know it's hard because both of us listen to such a wide range of stuff, mm-hmm. you know, that it's hard to say, oh, what kind of music do you listen to? But
oh yeah, that's always a hard question for me. And it's a question I get a lot because it's like at work, you know, when there's new people or whatever, and you're just trying to like get to know each other and shoot the shit, that's always the question, like, what do you listen to? And it's like, I can never answer
do
that
it too.
But like
I always fail that question.
Yeah, I think it's hardest for people that love music, I think, just because like, how do you like narrow it down? But I got into music, I always have been into music, and it's like, I don't know where to start the real start. Like, how do I, you know, but I'm going to say like when it really just took a turn from junior high doing the like Columbia House, getting a bunch of tapes for a penny. And like, that's great. I was into music and I had all the like, you know, the hip hop music that was in of the late 80s. But then this thing happened around like ninth grade, like this switch happened. And I owe all of that, I think, to my friend Erica. She was my best friend, and she listened to college radio. I didn't even know what college radio was until I met her. And we would stay up and we would listen to the K-Sun, I believe it was. It was for Sonoma State University. Their kind of like evening broadcast. And the guy that I wish I fucking remembered his name, and I do have a really good memory, and I like thought of his name a year ago and I just don't remember it anymore. But this one guy who was the DJ of like their like alternative hour or something also worked at Musicland. It may have been the warehouse. It was either the warehouse or Musicland, but he worked in a mall music store. And he was really into anything that was considered alternative at the time. So like he was into the shoegaze, like Ride, and he was listening to Brian Jonestown Massacre. And but then also, you know, that's where I got my first taste of like kind of like gothy stuff, anything grunge, anything, you know, like Teenage Fan Club. She wears denim wherever she goes, says she's gonna get some records by the status quo. The Breeders, trying to think, just everything 90s alternative, like hit me over one like summer of becoming like very tight friends with this girl, Erica. Wow. And we'd make each other mixtapes.
So this is like 92?
91.
91, okay.
Yeah. Right. Or maybe even 90. I think it's... I graduated in 94, so 91. Yeah.
Okay. I was just trying to guess and like based on the band. So
yeah.
Yeah.
91. And so after that, it just kind of stayed into music. And then after high school, I moved into a punk house. And then I was like completely introduced to like indie rock and punk and like, Kill Rock Stars and K Records and all the, like, it just felt so amazing that there was music that was even like smaller, like that, like it would never even play on our radio. And like, I felt like I knew a secret, that like, I just knew all this stuff that nobody else knew about. It was really fucking exciting. So, and so during that time, it was like a lot of, I'd say kind of that like slacker indie rock stuff that was in like 94, 95, Archer's a Loaf, Superchunk.
Love that
the
stuff.
The Chapel Hill scene.
Love the Chapel Hill scene. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me, how did you, what was your like beginnings with music?
You know, a similar story, just like slightly, ever so slightly later and ever so slightly north. You know, okay. I grew up. In rural Washington, northeast of Seattle. And I used to, I mean, my family's really into music. And so I really grew up surrounded by it in all different sorts. But, you know, my family is like my mom, my uncle's a musician, and my mom's just a music lover. Mm-hmm. And just, they're just so, such a broad range of artists from like, you know, like 60s kind of hippie folk artists, mm-hmm. like Tim Buckley, mm-hmm. or, you know, folks like that to, or like Leon Russell or something, mm-hmm. to, but a lot of soul and a lot of Motown. Cool. And, you know, I think, as a kid, I probably heard more Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye than maybe anybody.
Yeah.
Jimi Hendrix was up there too.
Yeah.
They both listened to a lot of Jimmy. And so I was really into music, but I didn't listen to a whole lot of new music, uh-huh. until I was in middle school. And I don't know how it happened, but I discovered the College Station.
Okay.
Out of Seattle.
Again, the College Station. It's College the gateway drug.
Yeah, it's such a gateway. And it was KCMU, which became KEXP when Paul Allen bought it out and changed, but it's essentially the same station.
And they're like huge.
They're huge now. You know, I mean, tastemakers for the entire world now. And, but they were just a dinky little college station out of the University of Washington, and they played a really broad range of stuff, and so much stuff I'd never heard, and I just kind of had my ears opened up. And so this was, you know, when I was in middle school, it was 94.
Okay.
And so that's, and no one else I knew listened to that, and yeah, especially for those first couple of years.
Did you have
years.
Some favorites?
Favorite artists at the time?
Yeah.
You know, I did. I mean, Archers of Loaf were actually one of my favorite bands at the time.
Totally.
I read a review of their second album, VV, in a zine. And I was just like, this was this era where I couldn't listen to that. So I didn't even hear it on the College Station until after I'd bought the album. But I was just
VV's
like,
my favorite.
Oh, which it's so good.
It's so good. Everybody says Icky Metal, but
no. Yeah, I mean, Icky Metal is good too. And I bought that. I bought it soon after, you know, but I bought VV and I was just like, whoa, okay. You know, like, this is something way different. I was interested right from the get-go, and it got me into the whole Chapel Hill scene and just kind of like, but I mean, I was also like growing up, this was like grunge era Seattle. So right. like, and I was just like 40 miles away from that.
Yeah.
So it was just like all the Seattle bands, all the popular ones, but also all the like really small ones right. too, you know? And so, and the one that's lasted was not the one I was the most into at the time, but I like heard the Gits really early on, Mia Zapata's band. And I don't know, like, I really liked them at the time. Didn't get super into them till I was an adult, but now it's just like, that's like the Seattle grunge era band, even though they're like more of this like kind of bluesy punk band. Yeah, and then I just, as I went on in high school, I just kind of listened to more and more music. I played in punk bands and like, but like, and then after high school, I lived with some DJs and got really into hip hop and, you know, like electronic music for a while. And now I just kind of listen to it all and, you know, kind of don't, I just, try not to set too many boundaries on what I listen to.
Yeah. What are you listening to right now?
Well, I run a label and we haven't put out anything all year, in part because everything was supposed to come out when coronavirus hit, you know? And so but finally it's just kind of this moment where it's like, okay, people are finally ready to release some things, even though they can't tour or do other things. But it's a really small label called Antiquated Future, and it's part of an online store, Zine Distro, I run. And so I've been working on these albums. Some local artists, Dow Strom, who's a local writer, who's been on the show and musician, and collaborating actually with Jeff and his label / press Phonograph Editions. Okay. And we're putting together her album / book. It's collaboration, and it's going to be really good.
So the album goes with the book. It's like the soundtrack to the
book. It is,
I want a fucking soundtrack to my book.
Yeah, yeah.
But it wouldn't be my own music. It would just be a playlist.
Yeah, right. My book. That would be cool,
Maybe
too.
Maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, you should have a playlist, you know, like a Spotify or a download that comes with the book something. Yeah.
I'll do that.
Yeah, but Yeah, and also working on a couple other albums, one with Yarra Valley, formerly Indira Valley, and Sarah Renberg. And so these three albums are going to be coming out in the next few months. So I've kind of been listening to these songs a lot and trying to get into that mode. And but also I've been, I got turned on to a Portland band I'd never heard of called Baby Tooth.
Never heard of them.
Yeah. Really good.
When I go back finally to the fine place that I belong, I'll still believe you were my best friend. My mom says you're arrogant, but we all know the song. And my mom's called me arrogant too. And I get it, someone's drinking too much. But do you assume good feelings are a crutch? Well, maybe you should try.
But yeah, they just put out an EP last week on a local tape label I'd never heard of called Bud Tapes. They seem maybe brand new. And and it's just this really solid EP. And I'm like, I mean, I slept on it for a few days and the tape sold out in just a few days. So I feel like people have been waiting for this. Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, you know, and so I've really just been playing this EP over and over. And yeah, and earlier this year, I was really into the new Waxahachie album.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, Katie Crutchfield came out with this kind of like more alt country kind of. It's very, to me, it's like very, it's like the 2020 version of Lucinda Williams. Car Wheels on a Gravel Road, or what is
it?
Yeah.
Car Wheels on
And
I love her.
Yeah. And I just like was like, oh, at first I wasn't feeling it. And then it I grew on me and I was like, oh, this is just the best. And it led me back to her sister. Her twin sister, Allison Crutchfield, who I've always liked kind of better. But it led me back to listening to her first studio album from 2017, Tourist in This Town. And I have played those albums so much this year.
Yeah.
And and Andre Perry, who was on the show earlier this year, he turned me on to this album by Brittany Howard, who's from Alabama Shakes.
Okay.
It was her solo album. And it's really all over the place. Uh-huh. There's some like folk jams, there's some like jazz fusion songs, there's some like very like kind of like stripped down like retro soul songs.
Nice.
So it's all over the place and I don't necessarily love it all, but it's all good. And the jams on there are just so awesome,
right?
That I've been listening to that a lot too.
Cool.
Yeah. What about you? What have you been?
Well, I have like a few things. I have my ever going. I feel like I've been in a rut, but a good rut. Maybe this is what happens when you're 44 years old. But
I like the term good rut.
I'm in a good rut.
Use that.
Yeah, I'm in a good rut. And this good rut now has existed for, I don't know, 8 years. And the good rut consists mostly of, I guess, folk and kind of like alt country-ish kind of stuff. I like anything with like the pedal steel or anything with piano even. So I think that like I always have like a playlist that I just add to, and it has like, you know, the classics you would expect, like Townes Van Zandt or something. And lately I've been into, well, by lately I mean it's only been 2 years, so this feels like fresh
real
to
fresh,
me.
Yeah.
Real fresh. But I kind of accidentally stumbled upon an artist named Aura Kogan, and she was opening for this band that to me sounded kind of like a, I don't know, I feel like they were kind of like a yet another Joy Division ripoff, but we were going to see this headlining band, and she was opening for them, and I guess you could throw her into sort of folk, dark and creepy,
maybe like Gothic folk?
Gothic kind of? Folk, kind of like a...
Marissa Nadler zone a little
Yeah,
bit.
A little bit. A little Beth. Yeah. What's her last name? Beth from Portishead.
I can't think of her last name.
I can't think of her last name. Gibbons.
Gibbons,
Beth
Gibbons. Yeah.
Yeah, right. So a little that creepy, fucking so beautiful song.
Come on, my love.
Everything I've heard from her is amazing, but that album Shadowland is like maybe my favorite album in like 10 years. Like I listen to it so much, it's kind of crazy. I also really love Aldous Harding.
Oh, yeah.
She's great. This is like my writing. I like Gene Clark from The Byrds, his solo stuff, but I love The Byrds, you know? Like
I've never listened to Gene Clark's solo stuff.
So good. I always listen to Cass McCombs. I think I've been listening to him since the beginning. So those things don't change, but what I'm specifically listening to at the moment is it's funny, I have a 90s playlist that I continue to add to because when I write, so in this memoir right now, I'm in the 90s, so I need to like transport myself there, and so I'm listening to 90s music that I didn't necessarily listen to at all or even necessarily like when the 90s were actually happening.
Yeah,
but it was so ubiquitous, and it like I think even more so because I didn't listen to it so much, when I hear it, it just triggers like that exact time, and then I can access the memory that I'm trying to access.
Yeah.
So, and now
I love those memory cues, and music is such a strong one. There's a really great, this section, Julia Shears, I think her last name is, she wrote this memoir about, I mean, I think it's like growing up between the Dominican Republic and Indiana, I think is what it is. But she has this thing where when she was working on that she started using, it was like set in the 80s, and she started listening to the music that she used to listen to. She started using the shampoo she used to
use. I love that.
Like,
if I could only find the shampoo.
Yeah, just like things like the candles that she would burn, you know, in high school, and like had all these sensory triggers to just kind of be put back in that time period.
Yeah.
So I love that you're doing some things that you are like, I don't even like these things that much, but it just works.
They do something, and you start to like them. I mean, some of them I mean, it's like a lot of it is the 90s, like one hit wonders, like that Eve Six song about putting like your brain in a blender.
Brain in the blender.
Yeah. And the Marcy Playground, shit like that. Yeah. But which like you can't ever like really genuinely like, I mean, maybe, but then it's like, for example, like with like grunge and everything, I liked Soundgarden okay, but I was more into like the Melvins, and I wasn't really love like a Melvins. Soundgarden person. Yeah. I fucking love the Melvins. But right now, because of this playlist, I've been listening to a shit ton of Soundgarden.
I mean, they dominated the radio for a few years.
Yeah, and they're so good. Like I love them now.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. Something switched. Yeah, like not that I never disliked them, but I just was never, they weren't as much on my radar because they were a little bit more commercial.
Yeah.
Than some of the other grunge offerings. And now I'm like, oh yeah, this shit's solid. So that's on the playlist. So it's kind of fun going back and then I can add more when I think of things. And the awesome thing, you know, this is not a plug for Spotify because I'm sure they're fucked, but I do like that. It's like, it'll remind you of other things that, you know, you make a playlist and then it makes a radio out of your playlist and you're like, oh fuck that song. I forgot about that one.
Yeah, yeah.
This gets added into the playlist.
Yeah. A few years ago, some other music journalist friends, people who are like more actual music journalists than I am,
you know?
But that they made this like many hour long YouTube playlist of like what alternative radio actually sounded like in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it was like,
ooh, the
so many songs I forgot about. Most of it was horrid and didn't hold up at all. But I listened to the entire thing over the course of a couple weeks. And I was just like, at the end of it, I was kind of like, I feel like the whole alternative music scene just actually sucked. And I just like was like, I was like tricked into believing it was cool and you know, but it was actually like an amazing experience for me because though I did hear some things that I loved and like some things that I completely missed, there was just like so much that I was like, wow, I really thought this band was cool, and now in retrospect they're just so not. But it was, I had to,
there
was some grappling that I had to do in the process because so much of it was so bad, but I really liked going through it.
Not to put you on the spot, but if you can name one, that would be kind of fun.
Oh, there was just some funny things because there would be like those kind of like, you know, like the early Beck stuff was like alternative music as well, you know? So there was like this like weird white hip hop too. So like there would be like MC 900 Foot Jesus.
Oh, I remember.
You know? Yeah, and
they
was like,
opened for Portishead when I saw them play, and like,
and that wasn't like the worst thing at all. You know, like it was like kind of cool in its own way. You know, he has that video where he's riding in a box, like through the city, like maybe on a skateboard or something. He's like inside of a box.
Okay, and I don't know why I don't remember.
Yeah, it was. It's a pretty cool video.
Nice.
But and then some things like Drop 19s, which are kind of like a like one hit wonder shoegaze band, you know? So there were some things in there that I was like, oh, they're pretty good. I kind of blocked out some of the worst of it though.
Yeah. I think it's like once the record execs were like, ooh, alternative is a thing. Like they just wanted to pound out as many, I don't know why I use that word, but they really they wanted to churn out as many like quote unquote alternative bands as they possibly could. And they had like an outfit and a haircut, but their music was just like this, just maybe it was garbage studio produced kind of just saccharine shit that I feel like that's probably what was happening. I mean, that's obviously what was happening in the 90s because a lot of it, like we want to remember all the good stuff, but there was a lot of crap.
Right. And I tried to tell friends about this who love 90s music and they're like, I don't know, I was just listening to the bands who are good, I guess, because I love the 90s. And I was like, I mean, I love so many 90s bands too, but like all the stuff I forgot about, there's a reason I forgot about it.
Yeah.
And like people kind of weren't willing to hear it in a certain way. And I was like, okay, I could get that. I get that. You know,
I have the opposite thing where like I work with a bunch of really young people in their 20s who are like, oh my God, I love the 90s, because they love the 90s the same way I love the 70s. It's like you always love the era that you like don't remember that you were like born in. And like, so their 90s, like what's 90s to them is a lot of this like it wasn't really like the cool stuff. It was kind of like the crap, but it got like the most radio play and the most airplay. And it's like, there's this part of me that's like, the snob in me is like, oh man, that shit's like, that wasn't even the cool, like no one cool listened to that. Right, that was shit. But it's like the same thing for me in terms of like the 90s stuff, or not the 90s stuff, the 70s stuff, or even like the 60s stuff that I thought was cool. And then my uncle would make fun of me and say that was like bubblegum, or no one liked it, or they were like, you know, kind of fraud or frauds, or like some sort of ersatz band, you know, trying to be something else. And I'm like, oh, so it's fine. They can like the kind of crap, because I like some crap too.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I like lots of crap.
Oh, there's so much crap.
I like Kenny Rogers. I don't want to say Kenny Rogers is crap, but I legitimately like him in like in a non-ironic way.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much really cheesy music that I love in a non-ironic way. And I think that's just comes with having a really expansive taste in music. You know, that like once you kind of allow certain sounds in, you know, like you're like, well, this opens me up to all of this other stuff, you know, like, oh, this, like, I mean, we're in this age of like reissues, right? You know, that like we're hearing all these artists that didn't make it at a time, at certain eras, and then like hearing them and revisiting them and being like, wow, this is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Which I like going through that process, even though sometimes it feels like I should be listening to new music rather than, you know, these missed moments of the past. But just that some of those artists have opened me up to kind of like other things of that era that actually were popular and kind of using similar sounds. And I was like, okay, well, I can claim this unheard artist as cool, but I can't claim Kenny Rogers as cool.
Right.
But like they share some, you know, there's some the crossover there. For and sure. Like, if I allow one thing in, then like it just opens me up to that much more stuff, including the like really shitty pop stuff. Yeah. You know? So,
and sometimes I just want really shitty pop. There's like a time and a place for really shitty pop.
Too. Yeah. Definitely. Who are we going to have on in this second half of the season?
Well, our first guest is going to be Santi Elijah Holly.
Yeah.
And he's a great writer. He's a DJ. I've seen him. He's DJed my mimosa brunches before. Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I know that he has a 33 and a third book coming out about Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds, the murder ballads. So I'm very excited to discuss that.
And, me too. Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be really cool.
Yeah. So that's going to be our next episode in a couple weeks. Yeah. And then we're going to have on Chelsea Beaker.
Yes. Yeah. Her book, Godshot, I read in like just a couple of, like, I just tore through it in a few days because I couldn't put it down. And I'm excited to have her here. I'm excited to see, like, to talk to her about writing and her book, but also like what music she listens to. And I don't know, it's going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm really excited. I've done a couple of readings with Chelsea, and I just cracked her book today. I'm already loving it. And so I'm really excited to talk to her. I don't know her super well, but I think that makes it kind of better.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what she's going to say. I don't know what kind of music she likes at all. And
likewise.
Yeah. So, so that's pretty fun. And we're going to have a couple musicians on, hopefully.
Yes.
The people that you're bringing on that I am going to have to do some crash courses in, which I always love doing.
It's
but
fun.
So
I'm going to have for sure, we're having Matt Coleman. He is in the band Real Estate, and he's just a fucking awesome, great guy.
He's doing composing,
like soundtrack stuff for, why do I always forget his name? Sion France is the last name. He did Blue Valentine. Derek.
Right. Yeah.
Who I should remember because he's friends with my friend, but I don't know. So he's doing some soundtrack stuff. I want to know more about that. I'm excited for that. And then I'm talking with Steve McBean from Black Mountain. He's also in Pink Mountaintops. He's also done other musical projects. I don't know. We are in conversation in terms of him coming on. So we'll see if that happens. Yeah. That'd be really awesome if he could come on here.
Some bookish psychedelic rock conversations.
Yeah, that'd be really cool.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we both, Santi, and then also Elena Passarello.
She's amazing.
Oregon essayist. She's so amazing and a real charmer too. Mm-hmm. You know,
she has her own podcast. That's just hype that.
Yeah.
It has a really long name.
I'll find myself when I'm dead.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. I'll find myself when I'm dead. It's got the little Elvis thing on the, when you look for the little icon for it. Yeah.
Yeah. And she's, it's all about the literary essay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really interesting.
And they make cocktails too that have to do with the literary. They'll make her partner will make a cocktail sort of based on whatever they're talking about. And that's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah, it is fun. And we had her booked and Santi back in March and obviously had to cancel both those. So trying to reschedule with Elena as well and get her onto the show.
And for the record, we've canceled those ones because they were not filmed, recorded in studio, but now we are recording remotely. So we're safe.
This is our
COVID safe.
This is our first episode, the beginning of our first episodes outside of KBOO Studios here in Portland. Mm-hmm. So figuring out how to do this at home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So far it seems great.
We haven't listened back to it.
Yeah,
so
might sound like,
who knows?
Might sound like garbage.
Yeah, might sound like garbage.
Just put a lot of those sound bites.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make it sound like
shiny garbage.
You're like shiny garbage. I'm like Radiolab. I love Radiolab.
Yeah.
Just make it sound really. Just a lot of bells and whistles and voices. And,
right. Yeah. Put some effects on.
Woo! That'll be good.
All right. Anything else?
I don't think so.
This tape is recorded, for now, remotely, from various homes in Portland, Oregon. It can be heard through Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Player FM, as well as our website. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook. New episodes come out every 2 weeks. Thanks for joining us.